Welcome to the Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, with your host, Director of the MVAA, Zanetta Adams.
Welcome to the Veterans Perspective. I'm your guest host for today, Robert Neer, the Deputy Director of the Michigan Veteran Affairs Agency. Today, we're talking about the month of June being the National Month for PTSD Awareness. In today's program, we'll be talking with some special guests who run programs that help veterans with their PTSD. Our special guests are Sean Seguin, who's the alumni manager for the Wounded Warrior Project in the Pittsburgh chapter, Dr. Catherine Porter, the chief of the PTSD clinic at the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, and Reverend Shelley Rood, who runs Women of the Military, a peer support group. I'm excited to share with our listeners that we have a new way for you all to interact with the Veterans Perspective. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, or if you have an idea for a topic to be discussed on a future show, please visit our website. We'd love to hear from you. Stick around. It's going to be a great show. Welcome back. On today's show, we're talking about PTSD because June is National PTSD Awareness Month. We want to discuss this because it affects so many Americans at different points in their lives, especially veterans who have gone through some form of trauma. We want to assure all of you who are suffering from PTSD that you are not alone. We'd like to talk about PTSD today. Post-traumatic stress, what does that mean? Post-traumatic stress disorder is either a direct or indirect exposure to any traumatic event, followed by some level of symptoms in any of these four categories. An intrusive thought, something that is intruding into your life, for example, nightmares, night terrors, flashbacks, anything intrusive. Avoidance of some sort to an extreme, either way, negative changes in your thoughts and mood, and changes in arousal and reactivity to things. So anything extreme either way that's impacting you in one of those areas. It's normal to have upsetting memories, to feel on edge, or to have trouble sleeping after a traumatic event. And this is also called trauma. At first, it may be hard to do daily activities that you're used to doing, like going to work, going to school, or spending time with people who you care about. But most people start to feel better after a few weeks or months. For some people, PTSD symptoms may start even later, or they may come and go over time. It's really inconsistent. If it's been longer than a few weeks and thoughts and feelings of trauma are upsetting you or causing problems in your life, it's possible that you may have PTSD. Anyone can develop PTSD at any age. Some factors can increase the chance that someone will have PTSD or can't or won't. Many of which are not under the person's control are things, for example, having a very intense or long-lasting traumatic event or getting injured during an event that you had absolutely no control over does have a higher chance that you can develop PTSD. So PTSD is also common after certain types of trauma, specifically combat exposure and sexual assault. Avoidance is a common reaction to trauma. It is natural to want to avoid thinking about or feeling emotions about a stressful event, completely fine and normal. But when avoidance is extreme, or when it's the main way that you cope with that trauma, that's when it can interfere with your emotional recovery and the healing. Another really well-known, I guess, PTSD trigger is an anniversary of a traumatic event. Some survivors have increased in distress specifically around those traumatic event anniversaries. These anniversary reactions can range from feeling mildly upset for a day or two to a more extreme reaction with more severe mental health or medical symptoms. Everybody responds to traumatic events in different ways, such as feelings of concern, anger, fear, anxiety, or helplessness. Research shows that people who have been through trauma, loss, or hardship in the past may be even more likely than others that have not been exposed to those to be affected by new and potentially traumatic events. For many veterans, memories of their wartime experiences can still be upsetting long after they've served in combat. Even if they've served many, many years ago, their military experience can still affect the lives of them today. Trauma and abuse can have grave impacts on everyone, to include those very young. The attachment or bond between a child and a parent matters as a young child grows. This bond can make a difference in how a child responds to trauma throughout their life. Trauma often affects school-aged children and teenagers differently than adults. But when diagnosed with PTSD, the symptoms in children and teens can look very different. For many children, PTSD symptoms go away on their own after a few months. Yet some children show symptoms for years if they do not get the treatment that they need. There are many treatment options available, including talk and play therapy and many other modalities of treatment. Service members are exposed to traumatic events during conflict, during war, combat-created life-threatening situations, those injuries and accidents included. Civilians living in war zones are also at high risk for trauma, wartime combat trauma. I encourage all of you to learn more about this kind of research that explains the link between war, combat stress, and PTSD. PTSD can happen to anyone. It's not a sign of weakness, and there's a number of factors that can increase the chance that someone will have PTSD or will be resilient and be able to be adaptive and bounce back at a quicker rate, and many of which are not within a person's control. For example, if you were directly exposed to trauma or injured, you're more likely to develop PTSD than someone who's not. Here's some statistics about PTSD. About 8 out of every 100 women, or 8%, develop PTSD at some point in their lives, compared to about 4 out of every 100 men. The number of veterans with PTSD varies drastically depending on service era. We know that 15% of Vietnam veterans report having PTSD, while 12% of veterans that were in the Gulf War experienced PTSD. And in present, it's roughly 11 to 20%, and it fluctuates year over year, of those who developed PTSD in Operation Iraqi Freedom or Operation Enduring Freedom. Now, even though PTSD treatment works, most people who have PTSD don't get the help that they need. So on this week's show, we're going to have some organizations who are here to help and that can give us additional exposure to help support us and encourage us to, and for individuals that are around us, to encourage people and identify those signs of PTSD and get people the treatment and the help that they need. So don't go away. When we return, we will begin our conversation with our first guest, Sean Seguin. Please join me in welcoming our first guest to the show, Sean Seguin, who served in the United States Marine Corps for 14 years. He joined the Wounded Warrior Project in 2017, serving as the outreach specialist for Colorado Springs office and later the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania office. Sean now currently serves as the alumni manager in Pittsburgh. He joined the Wounded Warrior Project as a continuation of his service, wanting to give back to his country and all those who have served. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Please, could you just real quick, give us an introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the Wounded Warrior Project.
Yeah, certainly. The bio kind of covers me in a nutshell. I was a Marine, pretty proud of my service, and I got the opportunity to continue my service afterwards, taking care of our veterans. My team is a part of Wounded Warrior Project, is our outreach and engagement team. So we host events all throughout the area. Part of my team covers the great state of Michigan, which is what kind of led us to our connection piece here. Wounded Warrior Project itself is a post 9/11 based organization serving our wounded, ill, and injured population through a variety of means, whether that's mental health opportunities, financial wellness, benefits, career opportunities, physical health and wellness. The goal is to be as holistic as possible in providing the support they need in the various transitions that occur for veterans, whether that's when they directly get out of service or years later when they realize that they're starting to struggle. My program in specific is kind of where the boot hits the pavement, if you will. So we'll be the ones that you see hosting events in your hometown. Great example is next month we'll be out for Detroit Tigers game, but we're also going to be hosting some of our peer support group meetings in both Detroit and Grand Rapids. So we host events all over. Heck, we're even hitting Traverse City here soon. We're going to be doing a water park multi-day event up there for some of our families to get out and have some fun.
Oh, that's awesome. And that, you know, I'm very familiar with your programming, and I know a lot of people and individuals who you support, and just been phenomenal in their life. And I'm guessing some of the reasons that you decided to continue your service by Wounded Warrior Project is because you had some level of experience with Wounded Warrior Project. Do you want to talk about that at all, or why did you join WWP? What was the main motivating factor for you to be a part of this team?
Sure. We call it living the logo. So if you've ever seen the Wounded Warrior Project logo, most people have. It's a soldier carrying another soldier. At some point in our lives, we're the one on top that needs to be carried. And when the opportunity arises, we get to be on the bottom and help support our fellow veterans. I myself was injured in combat operations in Afghanistan. I am also a suicide survivor, having survived two attempts. And since then, organizations like Wounded Warrior Project has been what's gotten me into a healthy mindset, into a healthy lifestyle, helped me connect with my family, with my fellow veterans, and with the community at large. And seeing the great work that organizations like Wounded Warrior Project has done for myself and others is a huge point of why I'm here today. Our day-to-day work is vital when it comes to being able to take care of individuals. But the great thing is we also understand that we can't be the only ones supporting. So we work closely with our partners like the VFW, Mission Continues, Team Rubicon. The list actually goes on. We try to work with as many individuals and entities as possible to provide the best resources for our veterans. But for me specifically, Wounded Warrior Project came in at a good part of my life. I might not look it. You've met me before. I'm a 6'3", 250-pound guy, but I really like wearing spandex because I like riding bikes. So the cycling program really got me engaged with my new physical self, got me out and about. So I ride a recumbent bicycle. I can do rides where before I, you know, looked at people on bikes and kind of laughed at them as an adult. And now I'm like, well, I could go do 100 miles if I really wanted to. Get out, enjoy the streets, get some good sun on my face, hang out with some really cool people. So being introduced to different hobbies, different activities, and different resources to take care of you are life-sustaining for a lot of individuals.
Oh, that's awesome, Sean. Thanks for sharing that, you know, your experience, and also for sharing with us your experience with suicidality as well. I really appreciate that and know it's never easy. So thank you for going out of your way to talk a little bit about your experience. Next question I have is a perfect segue from what you were just talking about, is support. Like, we support each other, you know, sometimes we're on top, sometimes we're the person helping the other person, you know, you never know where you're going to be. So what are some of the programs that Wounded Warrior specifically offers to veterans with PTSD?
So we have an expansive and amazing mental health program. So I'll kind of hit the wave tops on the different programs. The one that most people attribute to us first is our Project Odyssey, which is a 3 to 5 day experiential learning seminar where you go out and you do a lot of boring things. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if you find these things enjoyable, but you go whitewater rafting, horseback riding, rock climbing, you know, just drag activities. But in between that, you learn amazing coping mechanisms. You learn how to reorientate yourself with not just where you are at in your recovery path, but sometimes even as a couple. Because for our Project Odyssey, we do multiple variations. So there's a male and female only, but also a couples variation where the veteran and their significant other get to go out together and experience these amazing activities and life-changing discussions to get themselves into a better place. So that's yes, sir.
No, that's awesome. That's such great programming, and all those things are a blast. So thanks for sharing those for our listeners. I want to thank you for joining us today and talking a little bit about your program. Next, we're going to be talking to a clinical psychologist with the VA. So all the listeners out there, don't go away. When we return, we're speaking with Dr. Catherine Porter. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency. Now, your host, Director of the MVAA, Sonetta Adams.
Welcome back. I'm Robert Neer, the Deputy Director with the Michigan Veteran Affairs Agency, the guest host on the Veterans Perspective today. Our next guest is Dr. Catherine Porter. She's a clinical psychologist and the chief of the PTSD clinic at the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System. She also has an appointment as a clinical associate professor at the University of Michigan Department of Psychiatry. Her work focuses on improving treatment outcomes for veterans with PTSD through direct clinical care, research, and supervision, and education of trainees. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, super excited to have you on the show here today. Got some questions to go through with you, and we just want to get to know a little bit more about your perspective and kind of your professional role in supporting veterans with PTSD.
It sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah. So what made you want to go into psychiatry?
So I got into the field of mental health through a variety of kind of different experiences through my undergraduate training and graduate experience. During my undergraduate education, I actually had the opportunity to work with a provider in the VA doing some research, helping out on a research project, looking at veterans who had experienced trauma. And that experience really gave me the bug. It made me realize how much I really wanted to work with both veterans and PTSD as a whole. And it really set me off on the course of getting into graduate school and getting a PhD in clinical psychology to understand both veteran populations and PTSD specifically.
That's awesome to hear. You know, knowing how much the federal VA invests into young practitioners and all clinical work, it's just really cool to hear that that had that big of an impact in your life. So thank you for sharing that with me.
It definitely set me off on the right course.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, definitely did. And we appreciate all the work and continued advocacy that you do down there. Now, how many veterans do you, or the VA, is there numbers out there that says how many specifically that the VA treats just for PTSD?
It's a hard number to probably gather specifically. I'm not sure of the exact number off the top of my head. I think in terms of treating veterans with PTSD, the VA is definitely the primary force in providing care. Exactly how we look at the diagnosis of PTSD can change a little bit depending on what numbers you're looking at. So that might have to do with something like how many veterans are service connected for PTSD versus how many people come in for an encounter with someone in the mental health service, let's say. So I don't know the exact numbers.
Oh, yeah. So on that note, that, you know, you segue into something that's pretty important, all the different kinds of PTSDs that are out there. Mm-hmm. We talked about it really briefly in the beginning of this opening Veterans Perspective, but what are some of the most common PTSDs that you see clinically while you practice when working with veterans specifically?
Mm-hmm. So within our VA, and I think this is true of most VA clinics, we will treat veterans for any type of trauma. It can be something that happened in the military. It can be something that happened to them before their time in service or after their time in service. So it doesn't have to specifically be a military type trauma. That being said, the vast majority of people that we see are coming in for probably two main types of trauma. One is combat exposure, having experienced some sort of life-threatening situation or witnessing somebody else injured or killed during a combat situation. The second most common is probably sexual trauma, military sexual trauma, are the two biggest in terms of percentage types of traumas that we see. But we also treat a large number of veterans who are coming in for, child abuse, some sort of accident or injury that was particularly traumatic, but the largest percentage of people are coming in for either combat-related traumas or military sexual trauma.
Oh, okay. Thanks for sharing that. And so speaking of, you know, these traumatic events and those two specifically with military sexual trauma, MST, as well as combat experiences or combat exposure related trauma, Can you speak a little bit about what moral injury is and how that relates to those specifically? We hear this term all the time, but just want to know from a professional perspective of what does this actually mean in reality?
Yeah, so the term moral injury can mean a lot of different things, but the core concept is that these are events that have occurred in which a person feels like they may have engaged in some sort of behavior or witnessed or been around something that compromised their moral integrity. So it went against their own moral values. We see this come up, and a lot of times this term is used when we're talking about military type events in the context of maybe a person struggling with a combat event, let's say, where they were forced to kill or injure someone else. And they might have a very strong personal belief that killing is wrong or bad. And when they're placed in that position, they're left with this kind of dilemma afterwards that they can really struggle with. Even if it's an event that they can on an intellectual level say this was justified, it was something that needed to be done, there's sometimes that moral kind of conflict that can stick with a person and can lead to things like guilt or depression, can contribute to PTSD symptoms. It can show up in a lot of different types of events, but the main part is that something that they were involved in feels like it went against their own personal values.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you so much for breaking that down for us. And, you know, we at the MVA, we say we have a term, you know, it's okay to not be okay. And we want to encourage everybody to reach out for help and see, you know, seek professional treatment when you have the opportunity, or even if you don't have the opportunity. We give all of the many different lines and the different resources for individuals to reach out to and talk to. But when you're going to VA for treatment, what does it look like? Like, what does, from a veteran's perspective, what can they expect when going in and looking into different kind of treatment for PTSD specifically? Are there different modalities of treatment? And if there are, what does that look like? What kind of experience are they going to have?
Yeah. So when someone comes in looking for help, one of the things that we know is that when someone experiences a traumatic event, it can lead to a lot of different outcomes. PTSD is one outcome. But sometimes when people experience a traumatic event, they might find that they're struggling primarily with something like depression or substance use, or it might be that the symptoms that we call PTSD are the things that are most prominent for them right now. The reason why I bring that up is anytime someone's connecting for care or saying that they want help with something, the first thing that we're always going to start with is trying to get to know the veteran and trying to get a good sense of all of the problems or all of the goals that they have around their care. So it starts with an evaluation appointment, where I know that sounds like a really formal term, but the goal is to understand diagnostically what's going on as well as what their goals and values are. Based on that, we're gonna spend some time talking to you about treatment options that might help you meet your goals and get you connected to the treatments that are the best fit with whatever's going on right now. In terms of modalities, for post-traumatic stress disorder in particular, we offer what we call trauma-focused therapies, which definitely look directly at some of the things that we know maintain PTSD symptoms and talks to the veteran about ways to kind of approach some of those symptoms in a way that can promote recovery. We also talk about medication options. So we have medication providers within the mental health service that can offer a range of treatment options that can address some of those core symptoms of PTSD, as well as some of the comorbidities. In some cases, we'll also talk to veterans about other therapies or other treatment options that go along with some of the problems that we oftentimes see co-occur with PTSD or trauma-related disorders.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's quite a toolbox out there, and that it's really by understanding what is normal in their mind to try to identify where there could potentially be that moral injury and could open up exposure for their PTSD, for you all to really identify for them, how can I support you where you are? Does that sound accurate?
That's exactly right. Our goal is to figure out how to get them to be able to live the life they want to live and see what's getting in the way.
Yeah, that's awesome. And thank you for breaking that down. And just knowing that there's so many different kinds of trauma-focused therapy that you can really use and know that it's not just that stereotypical, you lay on a couch and you look at the ceiling. Just knowing that, I think, is going to be beneficial for some.
Well, I can put people's mind at ease. I don't have a couch in my office, so that's definitely not happening.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Thank you for going down that with me. So there's obviously some level of recovery rate for those who have experienced or are currently experiencing PTSD versus, you know, just not going in and getting any kind of treatment. So with the recovery rate, what does that look like for those who are experiencing PTSD? Is it a pretty successful treatment, or is it, you know, it's never going to work, or it's always going to be there? Is it consistent, or is it inconsistent? What does that look like?
Yeah, one of the things that we know is that when we look at questions around things like recovery, we know that for a lot of people, just coming in and getting help is hard. So when I hear you saying, we know that sometimes people come in, sometimes they don't come in. I think one of the things that we definitely know is just taking the step of coming in and getting care is a really important step. And people who come in and get care generally do pretty well. We know that there's a lot of ambivalence about a lot of difficulty, anxiety about coming in and getting help. But those people who do come in, we tend to see a lot of improvement and some pretty significant recovery rates. So one of the things that we do know is that with our treatments, we can see symptoms go down and we can see people's lives really improve. The question of how that looks for the rest of the person's life. When people stay connected to things in their life that have meaning and value, when they keep doing those things that help them stay well, they tend to do well for a really long time.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, I see it. I'm a combat veteran as well. And a lot of my comrades and spot on what you're saying. And I really appreciate you taking the time with us today just to go through this and talk a little bit more about maybe some of the myths that are out there. So really fun to have some of your time, Dr. Porter. I want to thank you for telling us and just explaining a little bit more about PTSD in general and kind of what that looks like in the VA clinic. And I really appreciate your time. Thank you, Dr. Porter.
Well, thank you very much for highlighting PTSD and the fact that there's treatment out there. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. And now to all our listeners out there, don't go away. When we come back, we will be talking with Reverend Shelley Rood, who runs a peer support group for women veterans. Welcome back to the Veterans Perspective. I'm here with Chaplain Shelley Rood, who became an ordained minister in 2022 after serving in the United States Army Reserves for 16 years as an intelligence officer. As a company commander, she led covert intelligence briefings and orchestrated security programs for nearly 4,000 soldiers. Her military awards include the Shield of Sparta and the St. Joan's d'Arc. She is a distinguished military graduate from Western Michigan University and earned a master's in art and ministry studies from Moody Theological Seminary. She now advocates for selfless service and action and is the creator of Others Over Self, a leadership mindset serving people in positions of influence to make a lasting impact on others. Alongside other projects, she and her team run a peer support program for military women. Shelley is happily married and is the mother of two boys. And Chaplain Rood and I go back quite a ways. And, you know, Chaplain Rood, I'm just super excited to have you on the show today. I haven't seen you and talked to you in quite a while. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. I was just saying, I don't know if I'm supposed to call you Robert or Mr. Near or what's appropriate, because I feel such a deep connection to you.
Yeah, it's been such a blessing to be able to see all your programming grow in the state and just be able to really support other veterans across the state. So it's awesome to have you on here. We're going to be talking today about PTSD and some of your programming. So really excited here to dive in. Are you ready?
I am absolutely ready for this.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about your peer support program, the one that you operate for military women?
So the official name of our program is exactly that, P peer support for Michigan's military women. And you can't market that very well, can you? It's kind of a mouthful. So we use the phrase woman veteran strong. It's just a phrase that we have attached ourselves to over the years. I met a very inspirational young lady years ago that gifted me something with that phrase on it. And so we've just been running with that. Now, woman veteran strong is given to us as a community through the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. And we're really designed to provide exactly that, peer support for women who either have in the past or are now currently serving in the military. Now, what makes us unique is that all of the leadership that you see, the women who are running the peer support groups, the ones who are organizing the events, every single one of us is personally a military woman. It's actually very difficult, I have learned over the years, to run a program that way. Being so deeply connected into this community, I always say I feel like I'm walking into the lion's den every day. These women are just incredible, and they're all so unique, and they're all so talented and gifted in so many different ways. And just when I think I've got something really special figured out, something else comes around the corner. And you know, over the years, Robert, we've learned that peer support needs to be supplemented. So, you know, I guess we should even talk about what do you think of when you hear the phrase peer support? Why are people even interested in peer support? So there is actually clinical evidence for peer support. And by that, I mean, when we look at mental wellness, we're talking about reduced rehospitalization. We're talking about reduced days spent inpatient in programs and really an overall lower cost of services. Mm-hmm. So with peer support, we're talking about connecting one-on-one with someone who has shared life experience. And for us, it really is as simple as if you served in the military as a woman, then we welcome you with open arms to be one of our peers.
Oh, that's great. And you know, it's awesome to hear because you think about the impact that we have on each other in going through that same acculturation process of joining the military and how everybody had to go through that experience. And it all really gives us that shared experience. But even more so to be a woman veteran, other woman veterans, it's just got to feel great. You know, knowing that you make an impact. So why is it important to begin with military women? Why is it important for them to have their own support group outside of, you know, the greater peer support group? But what is the difference there on impact? Is it something clinically different, or is it something that is just phenomenal impact? And what does that look like?
You know, as a military woman, we really are a unicorn. When you look at the percentages of how many people serve and then the percentages of male to female, and you keep cutting down, it's very difficult to find a woman who has served in the military. And as you know, being a person with military experience, we have a whole culture. And even inside of our military culture, every branch that we served in, meaning Army, Navy, Air Force, those have their own subcultures. And so I've learned that I get along really easy for the most part with my Army veterans because I'm Army, but maybe it's a little tougher for me to get along with my Air Force veterans. And I joke, it's, you know, they haven't necessarily even touched a weapon to qualify with. So here I am excited to maybe go to the range and they don't even know how to pick it up for the most part. And I'm just teasing in generalities here, but that's a good example where sometimes we over stereotype even just that phrase of being a military person or a military woman. And we think that we have it all figured out and that we're all the same in a lot of ways. And the truth is we're just not. And so that's really the power of peer support. You have to expose yourself as a military person to other military people, and not just one or two, but groups of them. And you really do have to find your tribe after you leave the military. You get along with military people better because we can communicate very similarly. For the most part, we already know what the other person is thinking or feeling. I had a good friend tell me years ago that she really appreciated her side-by-side buddies. And I said, what are you talking about, a side-by-side buddy? And she said, you know, Shelley, women like us, we don't want to sit across a table from each other over maybe a glass of wine or something and just talk. we want to do things side by side. We want to go to a hockey game. We want to go out on the shooting range, anything that you can do side by side. So I've really taken that idea to heart. And so even though we do come together in peer support groups, we're sitting down as a small group, maybe five or six people at the most, and we are talking about our feelings and the experiences that we're having in life, we have an added element of recreational therapy so that we are getting outside and we are bringing that side by side, doing and using your body together, as a way to deepen and further that peer support connection that we have with each other.
Oh, that's awesome. And, you know, it makes you think of the recreational therapy opportunities that are out there and that side-by-side theory. That's the first time I've heard that one. So that's super fun too. Just to hear it, because that is so true. I know the groups that I work, you know, in and blessed with having around my life, it's very similar. So I really appreciate you sharing that theory, because that is very applicable to both men and women. So here, I got another question for you. Is there any difference between how women handle the PTSD group or peer-to-peer support inside of handling their PTSD specifically that would be different than men?
That is a great question. And so here's how I'll answer that. I'm not a man, and I cannot say how men handle their PTSD within their support groups. And truly, I think there are so many factors there that it would have to depend on how the group is run, who's running the group, you know, the purpose of the group. When we talk about a peer support group, really what we're talking about is a group of people with shared life experience coming together. And sometimes when they come together, hopefully there's a trained facilitator who can take charge of the conversation and guide it one way or another. I can just share for you my experience working with military women. When my women come together for our groups, we don't want to sit around and pick at old scabs. We don't want to talk about the same issues or traumas that we're experiencing and re-experiencing. Our peer support groups exist so that we can thrive in life looking forward, right? We are not clinical therapy. Woman Veteran Strong is not clinical therapy. We are here to be a healthy social support system for you, outside or in conjunction with clinical therapy. So we see women who possibly need to have that level of clinical therapy, but have not investigated that for themselves, or maybe they've had it in the past and they might need to come back and circle around into it. That's where we fit that need, right? What we really want is to have that opportunity for self-care outside of clinical therapy. And that's what we provide. So in our groups, once a month when we meet, we do what's called forward thinking content. And the lessons are all the same each month across the state. That way, if you live in Lapeer, your women over in Detroit had the exact same lesson. So we have that in common.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Our forward thinking content, throughout the year, we cover what the women have asked us to cover. We want lessons on having better self-confidence. We want lessons on being graceful. We want lessons on anger management. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
And so we're really listening to each other and we're talking it out and we're saying, you know, if I could be a better person, more developed professionally and personally, what would that look like? And we create a lesson for ourselves through the guidance of experts that really help that come to fruition.
Yeah, expert. That's awesome. That is really what I was going for there, that question. I didn't want to have any division. I was really hoping to highlight, you know, how much amazing things are going out there for each subgroup of veterans and connecting each peer support individual with shared experiences. So I cannot tell you how much we appreciate you coming on the show with us today, Chaplain Rude, just because we go back before that title. I still get caught in my old ways of calling you Shelly, but I really appreciate your time today. And thanks for joining us, Shelly.
I do hope that everyone understands the importance of peer support. What we're doing is we're improving quality of life, we're increasing self-management, and we're increasing our own healthy habits. I'm all about wholesome living. And if I can help you get out of that bar, put down that whatever is in your hand and just learn how to be a healthy, wholesome person, that's what it's all about. So if you are interested or if your interest is piqued, visit us at woman, WOMAN, womanveteranstrong.org. And we do have a hotline you can always call at 58. I'm sorry, that's my phone number. Don't call that. You can call the hotline at 248-697-5973. Again, 248-697-5973.
All right. Thanks, Chaplain Rood. And you have a wonderful day to all our listeners out there. We just want to encourage you all to join us in the next show. And we want to thank all of our special guests, Sean Seguin from Wounded Warrior Project, Dr. Catherine Porter from the Ann Arbor VA and U of M, and Reverend Shelley Rood. Thank you for joining us all today. And we look forward to seeing you at the next Veterans Perspective.